The opinions expressed on this edition of Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. are not necessarily those of News Radio 92.3 AM 1620, but rather the opinions of the sponsor, Continental Public Adjusters, with host Mike Rump.
And welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel. My name is Ruthie C. I am so excited to be joining you this morning. How about this amazing, beautiful weather? It's just gorgeous out there. And I hope that you are having an awesome day. It's off to a great start. My first guest this morning, I'm very excited to welcome Mike Rump of Continental Public Adjusters. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Ruthie, I'm doing great, and I agree with you. That weather is great. I actually got to put my blue jeans on and put my shorts back in the drawer. So I'm really enjoying the weather. Yes, indeed.
Yes, and so how are you, Mike, since we spoke?
I'm doing great. We're rolling, picking up a lot of new customers that need help with their claims, and so I thought just due to the brevity of the program, I'd jump right in here. I'm getting a lot of questions about a lot of folks have both flood and wind damages and are actually juggling two separate claims at the same time, so I thought I would touch on the basics today of what to expect with each one of these carriers, each one for flood and one for wind. And they both cover two different things. Now, they both will cover your house, and they both will cover the contents within your house. And I get a lot of questions about what exactly is contents, you know, what is dwelling, and how do I separate them. And the easiest way, Ruthie, I've found, or the best way to explain it is, if you were to be moving from your house, anything that you put in the moving truck is almost always contents. On flood, flood is going to separate those two quite dramatically. They're going to treat them completely different between dwelling and between contents. But if the item is attached to your house, and I'll give you a good example. Let's say you have a microwave mounted to above your stove, and it's hardwired into the dwelling, into the building itself, then that's more than likely going to be considered part of your dwelling, part of your business. So it would be under coverage A, or the dwelling or building coverage. But in the same instance, if that same microwave is sitting on top of your counter and you just plug it into an outlet, then it's probably going to fall under coverage C, which is contents. Now, I want to be very clear. Now, flood is a pretty basic program. I've never been a big fan of government in insurance, and the National Flood Insurance Program is definitely run through FEMA and what have you, and so they make pretty strict and hard rules for their adjusters. There's not a lot of wiggle room. So the flood policy on a dwelling policy is normally very basic. It doesn't extend a lot of additional coverages like a normal homeowner's policy would. You're going to have, in most homeowner flood dwelling policies, you're going to have basic coverage for your dwelling, and then you're going to have coverage for your contents, and that's pretty much it. You don't get additional living expenses. You're not going to get law and ordinance coverage that you would, you know, to cover for additional things that the local building officials require you to do. You don't get any of that. It's very basic coverage. And the reason I bring that up is you want to make sure when you're presenting your claim to your flood adjuster that you separate these things out. And now on the coverage A, if you don't hire a professional like a public adjuster to help your claim, you're going to need to get somebody to put that estimate together for you to show what the damages are. And flood will cover if you have, let's say, a lot of folks I'm running into had a foot or two in their house. They didn't get flood all the way up to the rafters. So what flood will do is they'll go up to what we call the first seam of the sheetrock, meaning that about 4 foot high. If you have a foot of water in your house, flood will cover all of the damage in your house up to 4 foot. And sometimes they won't even paint past that 4 foot line, which I've always found silly and ridiculous, but that's the way they are. They definitely will only, and I'm assuming you have 8 foot ceilings in your house, but they'll only cover anything up to 4 foot. And so if you've got a lot of people will have flood in their house, they rip the sheetrock out, and the first sheetrock comes in 4x8 sheets. And so they'll rip it out up to 4 feet where there's a tape joint there and make it real easy. And then they paint everything up for that. But you want to make sure you get an estimate from a contractor that kind of follows the flood guidelines so that you don't waste time, like I said last week, asking for things that they're going to say no to. And then on your contents real quickly, the best thing to do is ask the adjuster, and a lot of times the agents have it. They'll have these what I call contents forms, inventory forms. And you fill out the first 4 or 5 columns on those, and you want to get as good a description on those contents as you can get. So if you've got a serial number and a model number and a brand on that, you know, a Toshiba poster, you know, whatever the item is, if it's a tool, you get the model number and you put the serial number down there and you put the age. But I encourage people, put as good a description of that item as you can if you don't have a model number. And then you submit that to them. And like we said last week, Ruthie, it's really important to make sure that you have everything in there and that you make it easy for the adjuster.
Yes.
I believe you have a caller, right?
We do. Yes. Just one moment and we will get David from Pensacola. Good morning, David. Welcome to the Pep Talk.
Good morning. I have a unique question. Maybe your guest there can help me out a little bit. Hurricane Sally coming in. I go to my parents' house at their request. They're pretty elderly, just to kind of ride the storm out with them. I park my car half on the street, half on their property. A tree comes down, damages my vehicle. It's actually a pickup truck. Now, their main insurance carrier, their homeowner's insurance, happens to be USAA, who's really good. And they say, you know, that's a windstorm issue. You're going to have to take it up with your windstorm people. So Citizens, you know how they put all the hurricane stuff and everything with Citizens in Florida. Citizens will make a claim with them, and they have some roof damage and stuff from a different tree, and Citizens works with them on the damages to the house. But Citizens says that vehicles are specifically excluded. Now, the truck in question only has the bare minimum insurance to drive in the state of Florida. It's an older truck, but you know, it's a truck that I need to be operational and you know, in good shape, or at least working. And Now I'm trying to figure out, is there an avenue where I can get any kind of compensation for the damages to my vehicle? Because I've got USAA saying it's Citizens, and Citizens saying we don't do vehicles.
Yeah, and David, I have bad news. They are both right. Motorized vehicles are typically excluded. If you have something that requires licensing for riding on the road, and that would apply, or on the water, then it's going to be excluded under homeowners and commercial policies specifically. So sorry to say, but the adjusters are right. You have to have insurance for that vehicle.
Yeah.
And that would go under there is coverage if you've got more than basic insurance for your automobile. There's
right,
more than
comprehensive,
there should be coverage for that, comprehensive coverage. And but that's your only avenue. All right.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I thought you was going to say. And I'll just follow up real quickly. I thought there might be some foothold in the fact that I was at their house at their request to help them when a windstorm, which is what Citizens does, is windstorm, and their tree that was on their property fell on my vehicle. So, I mean, my parents are even okay with me having to, you know, sue their insurance company. You know what I'm saying? but you just don't think there's anything there, even framing it the way I have, do you?
No, unfortunately. And what you're hey, outlining
you know,
would be.
Hey, I appreciate your honesty, and you know, and that's what the insurance companies call me too. So I just, you know, you got to kind of double check people sometimes. So you're just really reinforcing what they said, and really what I thought too. But I just kind of feel like
Dave.
No good deed goes unpunished, that kind of thing. But anyway, y'all have a good day. I'm enjoying the show. Maybe someone else wants to call in. Thank you much. Bye.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you so much, David, for calling. And yes, it looks like we do have another call coming in. I believe I'll work on getting that call on the line. But in the meantime, Mike, you were saying about the various, so when there's multiple insurance companies involved, those motorized vehicles are typically excluded under homeowners and commercial policies. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, they are. And it's very universal. So, but while he brought up another interesting subject, and this is always a lot of questions on this, there's a lot of trees down and people are always asking, if my neighbor's tree falls on my house, do I get to claim on their policy rather than mine? And that's a very sticky wicket. The only way that you could do that is if that tree that prior to the storm was rotten and you had sent a letter or two or three to your neighbor saying, hey, please cut this tree down. And then all of a sudden it comes down during the storm. You could file a liability claim in that case. But if the tree's just down, I mean, that's considered an act of God in our industry, and everybody covers their own. So the point being, don't have everybody in your listening audience trying to claim under their neighbor's policy because the neighbor's tree came down. It's not a factor. It doesn't matter. Your own policy will cover you for that.
Totally understand. And
that comes in a lot.
It does. I'm sure you see that a ton. And we do have another caller on the line. So welcome to the Pep Talk.
Okay.
Please go right ahead.
Hi. Yes. I had a question. My father is elderly, and he basically lost everything. His house flooded. No structure damage like roofing and things like that. It took him over a week and a half to get in touch with his insurance company. The adjuster came out and basically told him, well, I don't see any damage to the inside drywall because he had wood paneling up. Now we've taken the wood paneling off, and there's mold. And he's telling my father, which is a heart patient, he's had multiple heart attacks, he's had quadruple bypass, that he's going to have to take out all the sheetrock or they're not going to pay. So, we've been over there at the house every day cleaning, doing everything that we can possibly do to help my father, but what does he need to do? Who does he need to contact to get help on this, insurance claim?
Well, let me just tell you right off the bat that there is no requirement, and I always encourage people to read the policy. But one of the things, when you run into an adjuster that says something crazy like that, and to me that gets my blood boiling, because that's not true. You do not have to rip out all of your sheetrock in order for you to gain coverage. And so and there's nothing in the policy that states that you should do that. You do have to cooperate with the insurance company's investigation, and maybe they unartfully stated it improperly, and that's what they meant to say. So I'm going to go on that premise. I'm going to say they want you to put your claim together. And like I said last week, the burden on presenting your claim to the insurance company falls on you as the policyholder. And so whether you want to hire or if you want to do it yourself, then you need to get a little bit educated on exactly how to do it and know what the policy requires. And I would encourage everybody to read the conditions section of your policy, which lays out exactly what you're supposed to do when you have a claim. And then once you do these items, once you check all the boxes on the conditions section of the policy, then you can really put some heat on the insurance company and force them to respond to you. But what you're explaining to me is a situation where the adjuster is, in an inartful way, is basically saying you need to document your claim. You need to show us. We don't buy it right now. We're not seeing coverage, and which is flabbergasting to me because so I think the best thing for you to do in that situation is if you're going to try to handle this yourself, is to get a contractor in there. that will put together a detailed estimate and will explain to the insurance company. A lot of these guys, some contractors know how to work with the insurance companies a little bit. So you can either hire a public adjuster to come out and do this, or you can get a contractor to do it. But basically, you need to find all of the damage and submit that to the insurance company. Now, I didn't hear you say whether this was wind damage or flood. Did they say,
it's
or did
flood.
You?
It's is flood. It both? Yes.
Okay. So, well, that's really crazy for them to say they don't see any damage. I mean, there should be a water line or something. But and it brings me to another point. I would definitely, one of the most important things to do, and we touched on this last week, is to get that camera of yours out and document where the flood line is. There's normally a line of debris on the outside or on the inside of the house that will show the peak height of the flood. So get a picture of that, document that, and like I said, once you've done that, then you're going to be more than able to present that claim and get it covered. But a flood is pretty simple. You either flooded or you didn't. And if you did flood, then you have coverage automatically. So it sounds like you have a rookie adjuster, basically, and that you have you may have to go over a supervisor or something like that. So, but again,
okay.
The only problem
now,
I mentioned that. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The public adjuster, is there a phone number that I can give my father that he can, you know, talk to somebody and get
sure.
them hired?
Sure. Our number is, and I've neglected to give it, it's 1-800-989-4769.
Okay.
And by all means, give us a call. We can talk off air and try to get you through this. But it sounds like you have a new adjuster or an inexperienced adjuster and that doesn't know how to explain things properly. But we can definitely help you with your questions off there.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and thank you so much for calling. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm speaking with Mr. Mike Rump of Continental Public Adjusters. Mike, is this an indication of how busy y'all have been since the hurricane?
Yes. Yeah, we've got a lot of customers calling in, and you know, unfortunately, in the adjusting industry is a little stretched out right now because of the hurricane that hit in Louisiana. A lot of adjusters were over there, and that was a really bad storm. And even though it's not that far from us here, it's got the adjusters stretched out. So a lot of people are having trouble getting hold of their insurance company. And so another bit of advice I would give people is make sure, you know, it's one thing to call, and then sometimes that works. But if I call and I leave a message, I, as a rule, always send an email follow-up as well. You know, in Florida, the insurance company has a duty to respond to calls and written correspondence. But I've found over the years that with some insurance companies that your phone calls go unanswered, and according to the carrier, you never called. So it's awful hard for them to deny that you didn't send an email because there's a record. But definitely don't just call an email and call an email, and don't be afraid about being rude or being a pest. You have to, you know, the squeaky wheels get the grease, guys. So we got to make sure that we get in front of the insurance company and that they know you have a claim. And in the interim, while you're waiting on your adjuster, get to work putting your claim together. Like I say over and over, that's on you. You can't wait for the insurance company to come and do it for you because they're not as interested in getting a good settlement for you as you will be. You need to make sure you put everything in that claim and make sure that you document it. And like I said, document it and put as much information on those items as you can. There's a lot of folks that are really struggling with their contents inventories. That's something that a lot of people will hire us to do on these flood claims simply because it's so time consuming. But you do it once and you do it right and you're finished. And I know sometimes when people are staring at this mess and they've got water all over the place and the house stinks and there's bugs and mold and everything, you know, it's still up to you to document what your damages are, and you got to make it easy for the adjuster so that they make it, they get your claim through quicker and more efficiently. So it's very important that you do that.
And that's it. As we've been talking about, just taking those photos, you're your own best advocate, right? So building your case just to make it as easy as possible, as clear as possible, that, you know, like you said, the adjuster might not be as interested as you are in getting you the best possible outcome.
Exactly. I mean, we, like I said last week, the adjusters, and I used to be one, I love these storm adjusters because they give up their normal lives, you know, their happy lives, to come to a foreign place to them, you know, some place they don't live, they've probably never been there, and they work their little rumps off for the whole time that they're there, but they're motivated to get a lot of claims done. They're not motivated to sit in your living room and go through all of your contents. I find most of them won't do it. They'll hand you the inventory sheet and say, get to it, you know, and call me when you're done with it. So that's why I always say it's always good to have that finished when the adjuster gets there. That way you can walk him through it. He can document it himself. He knows what, or he or she knows what they need to do to get it through their supervisor. And you'll find that you get it done much faster. Your claim goes much smoother if you do that. But if you wait till after they leave and then you start doing it and you do it halfway and you forget things, your claim's going to drag. You know, it's just common sense.
Yes, yes. And so we're, if you're just joining, we are speaking about flood versus wind and how both can cover house and contents with Mike Rump of Continental Public Adjusters. And we've had some great questions today, Mike. Is there anything else you've been hearing, you know, just questions as people have gotten in touch with you? Any other kind of common themes?
Yeah, well, there's a lot, and just to finish my thoughts to begin the program, there's a lot of things you need to know when you go through these flood claims versus wind claims. So if you're fighting, putting your claim together, and you've got both flood and wind, I always prefer and it's very rare that this happens, but sometimes you get a decision as to whether you want to present something to flood or to wind. Wind is a better policy for you. Florida has a matching statute that our legislature put together to take the guesswork out of whether or not an insurance company owes to match your shingles on your roof, or whether they owe to match carpet or tile or your cabinets or anything else. Flood won't do that. Flood literally will replace your base cabinets if they're damaged, but many times flood damages the base cabinets, but it doesn't touch the upper cabinets. So flood, in those instances, they'll pay for replacing those base cabinets, but it's on you to replace the upper cabinets if they weren't damaged by flood. So again, that's another situation where I always try to find some kind of wind damage to it if I've got both claims going, so that I can try to get them covered completely, because folks typically don't want base cabinets that are black and upper cabinets that are white, you know, or completely mismatching. So you want to try to, there's some tricks to the trade, some things, the way you present it, that you might be able to get it done. But if you've got just flood and you've got damage to your cabinets and no damage to the uppers, you're going to be forced to buy those upper cabinets to match the lower cabinets. And that's tough, but that happens a lot. So, it doesn't do any good to present the upper cabinets to flood if they weren't touched by water. You just get the base cabinets in, get those submitted to them, and make sure you get good estimates, and off you go.
And if people want to get in touch with you, Mike, and the Continental Public Adjusters team, what is the best way for them to reach out?
The best number is 1-800-989-4769. If you want to just submit questions to us, or you want to go to our website, and there's a place on the website that you can leave us a message too, but it's continentalpublicadjusters.com. And we're here 24/7. We will try to get, if you don't reach us, because we are busy, but if you don't reach us right away, leave your name and number and your question, and I promise you we'll get right back to you with that day. And we're doing our best to try to help as many people as we can, because that's what we're tasked with doing.
Thank you so much, Mike. And now we are going to go over to Mark with the news. What's going on, Mark?
Well, it could be a long time before Fort Pickens reopens after Hurricane Sally. We'll have the latest from the Gulf Islands National Seashore after Fox News.